the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
This is going to be an update on Chicago with Philip Cantor, who is a representative of CTU. And we'll be talking about CPS, the Chicago Public School System. And I understand, Philip, how are you?
Hey, you know what? Can I stop you? I'm sorry.
Sure.
I'm not really a representative of CTU. I'm just a rank and file member of CTU.
Uh-huh.
I'm not in the leadership of Chicago Teachers Union. I'm not a spokesperson or anything for Chicago Teachers Union. But I am a member, and members can speak to the union, but I just don't want to portray myself as like something other than just a member of CTU. Is that okay?
Yes, that's wonderful. I love it. I think that makes it even better. But you've been teaching in the Chicago Public School System for how long, Philip?
About 13 years.
13 years. And I know from having had you on Education Now for before, two or three times, that you do some very innovative things with your students in terms of technology, and that was, you know, exciting. But I also know that you're really involved in what's going on in Chicago politics in terms of keeping an eye and an ear open, and how that's reflected in the rest of the world. I was very excited about Chicago Teachers Union because they actually had a strike. And I think that's mm-hmm. when I first contacted you. And are they planning mm-hmm. to do another strike?
So, yeah, that's a strong possibility right now. The strike that happened in 2012, I think, was a real turning point, not just here in Chicago, but around the country and not just for teachers' unions, but for other unions and community organizers. Just seeing that a group of people could work together and, present a unified voice and fight back against problems they see in society. And it looks like we may have to do it again. The teachers in Chicago voted with overwhelming support to authorize a strike. So the way it works here is the union membership has to give authorization to our leadership before they can call a strike. So the leaders don't run the union. The membership runs the union. And we did do that. Prior to 2012, people like Bruce Rauner, who at the time was just a businessman, investor, and campaign contributor to conservative causes, helped fund groups which tried to make it illegal or impossible for the Chicago Teachers Union to strike. They put into state law a provision that said that 75% of all membership would have to authorize a strike for there to be a strike. And that's a fairly high bar when you just think about a 75% vote for anything. Most votes are a simple majority or maybe a two-thirds majority. But not only was it a 75% of those who voted, but it was a 75% of all membership. So anybody who was out sick, anybody who was on leave, anybody who wasn't there that day, of the vote would be counted as a no vote rather than a neutral vote. So we had to really organize to get past that, which we did in 2012, and we did it again this year. So we had
88%. That's really strange, because usually no comment signifies consent.
Yeah, consent, or at least sort of a neutral position, right?
Yeah, right. But still, you know, that it would mean, oh, we agree that this is good policy. It's just is beyond absurd.
Yeah, absolutely. And the people who tried to use that against us thought, well, since, voter turnout wasn't that huge in the past, the teachers could never reach it. But the reason why voter turnout wasn't huge in the past is people were confident in the union and didn't feel the need to vote because they knew it would pass, right?
Right.
So it's pretty amazing that we've been able to get the kind of support we have. So we have authorized another strike, but whether that happens or not is still up in the air.
And if it happens, it's going to happen in February?
No, it can't happen until May. Part of what's going on is the laws that were put into place prior to 2012 also set forth very strict timelines of negotiation and mediation and fact-finding and a variety of different parts of the negotiating process. Each takes a lot of time, a month to 3 months, once negotiations break down. And what CPS has done is pushed back and stalled at every opportunity. So they've learned some lessons from 2012 because our strike was very successful. So they have pushed the strike back. We've been working without a contract since last June, and we've been negotiating since then in serious negotiations since last November, so for over a year. But CPS has really been stalling. So the earliest we could strike would be May, which is the end of the school year. So we may or may not strike even if negotiations break down. We may strike at the beginning of next school year, which would give the summer to try to, avoid the strike.
Right. And kind of take a chunk out of their strategy to do it after the kids are, after the school year. And when parents, it just stinks. But I really am glad that you made it clear that you were a member of the union. You didn't have any special position, especially with the kind of power that the union has given the membership rather than, a selected people in the union. When you said that, I thought, this really probably is a rebirth, and it's great that Chicago is in the front lines. I'm kind of, wondering now about the whole Rahm Emanuel thing. He's been under intense pressure and security since November when the courts forced him to release the video of a white police officer shooting African-American 17-year-old Laquan
McDonald.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 16 times.
Yep. Yeah, it's... So I think, again, it all sort of ties together from my perspective. The fact that the teachers' union stood up to Rahm Emanuel and his hedge fund manager backers back in 2012, I think has helped to energize people and inspire people. CTU is certainly not the only thing that has done that, but it's been part of it, I think. And so when it was discovered that Emanuel was hiding a video, or was refusing to release a video and had done a $5 million settlement with the family of the victim of that police shooting, in order to keep the video under wraps, people weren't going to stand for it. So there were massive protests, and pushes to get the video released. And then once people saw what was in the video, which was Laquan McDonald, being shot 16 times by an officer who just arrived on the scene, even though there were already I think, 6 to 8 other officers at the scene who had it under control. Laquan McDonald was acting erratically. He did have a small pocket knife, but he was not threatening anybody. He was walking away from the police at the time, and this other officer pulled up, got out of his car, and started shooting him within 30 seconds, and continued to shoot him once he was on the ground, and shot him 16 times. And once people saw that and realized that it had been over a year since that video was shot, since Laquan McDonald had been shot, and that that officer was still on duty and had had no disciplinary actions taken against him and had no charges filed against him, people took to the streets. A lot of teachers were supporting this because we see our students dealing with police harassment on a fairly regular basis, but this was not a teacher's protest. It was, you know, young African-American students and young people just sick of it. So it was sort of the Black Lives Matter movement here in Chicago just really blossomed and exploded in intense protests. They shut down the main luxury shopping district downtown called the Magnificent Mile, and they didn't just do one protest and leave it at that. They just continued day after day with a variety of different creative protests. They did die-ins at City Hall. They protested outside Rahm Emanuel's house. A group called Black Youth Project 100, or BYP 100, has taken the lead, and it's really amazing to see. And they're working now with parents who were activated during the Chicago school closings, and teachers who were activated during the strike. It's really, we're seeing a movement really develop, and it's not fading away. I think the movement is morphing and changing, but it's continuing, and it's trying to hold people in power accountable. Within a few days, Rahm Emanuel fired his police commissioner, but there are still calls for change. The change that Rahm has proposed, changes in the policing that Rahm has proposed, have been sort of weak and mediocre. That officer was charged with first-degree murder, although some legal analysts are saying that might even be a ploy because it's harder to prove first-degree murder than second, and therefore charging with the higher, the more severe crime might actually be a way to let him get off. But I'm not a lawyer. I'm not sure if that's true.
Well, taking a pocket knife away from a juvenile by a police officer that uses deadly force is murder. You know,
yeah,
there's
it
just
is, unless the kid is, you know, in the process of trying to stab you or something like that. Yeah, it's, you know, I understand police have a difficult and dangerous job. They have to make judgment calls, but there were. Yeah, there were all these officers there who had it completely under control. Nobody was going to get hurt. Hopefully this young man would get some help. He needed help, not to be shot. It is murder. And when you see the video, it's clearly
It clearly is a murder. I posted the video this morning on our local Occupy page, and it is so very clearly murder.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like one of the things that is going to have to happen is that President Obama is going to have to look Rahm Emanuel in the eye. And I hope that happens on my watch, because I do feel like, you know, President Obama has given him kind of a go-ahead, you know, in the eyes of especially many people of color, and I feel that it is so misguided, his nod to Rahm, and so out of keeping with what he said about Martin Luther King and the we, you know, the compassion, the compassionate voice. You know, that says we, you know, it's just not part of Rahm's MO. You know, I don't see that in him at all.
Yeah, compassion isn't really his thing.
No. And so I really want that. And I you know, we're talking about this on Martin, on the celebration of the life of Martin Luther King, and the kind of upsurge in racism, in especially in areas of poverty and in your in Chicago, right?
Yeah, no doubt. And what you're saying about Obama is very disheartening to me. Not what you're saying, but what Obama has done. I mean, he has basically, like you said, just been complacent, and he has not criticized Rahm for any of this. And neither has Hillary Clinton criticized Rahm for any of this. And the Clintons, you know, are very close to Rahm. Rahm did fundraising for the Clintons. You know, that's part of how he got his start in politics. And it's horribly frustrating that some of those folks are not holding Rahm more accountable.
Well, I understand that some unions have supported Hillary Clinton without even asking the body, you know, all of the its members.
That's right. The American Federation of Teachers endorsed her months ago without, you know, and they said they did a poll, but I'm a member of the American Federation of Teachers as a member of CTU, and I never saw a poll. They didn't ask us.
The majority,
said about education.
Yeah, the majority of teachers that I know are supporting Bernie Sanders, and
he's also the only candidate that came out and said that Rahm Emanuel needs to be held accountable on this too. The only Democratic candidate. So, yeah, I can see that some of the comments Hillary has made about needing to close, you know, half of all schools. She said something about closing, you know, the 50% of schools that are lowest performing at some point. It just shows a complete misunderstanding of, you know, education and basic statistics. You know, it's really frustrating.
Yeah, it is frustrating. She says the rhetoric, you know, she talks about how important the formative years are, you know, and how, you know, that's just, you know, how that's been proven by science and, you know, that's why we need good daycare, you know, and all this. But her actions, who she wants to support, it sounds like these chain charter schools. I mean, you know, it just makes me sick because people, you know, you have to, it's difficult for many people to criticize her because she's a woman and they want so much for a woman to have the kind of position in world politics that they feel, you know, women deserve. And I certainly have no argument with that. I mean, I just love Senator Warren. If she were running, I would have absolutely no problem. And she may actually be Bernie Sanders' vice presidential running mate, Elizabeth Warren, and that would be so beautiful. But to support this woman whom I've known because, you know, I'm a child of the 60s, and I know what she and Ronald Reagan did to the Black Panther Party. I know how all of those incredible social programs that were innovated in Oakland were destroyed by her and Ronald Reagan and their ilk. So I don't have any problem not supporting Hillary Clinton.
Sure. I mean, if you look at incarceration rates, skyrocketed during Bill Clinton's time in office. And
right.
Hillary supported the tough-on-crime measures and mandatory minimum sentences and things like that. It's absolutely. I completely agree. I've lost a little bit of faith in electoral politics overall since I was a big supporter of Obama and then saw what he did with our public schools and what I consider sort of somewhat half-hearted measures on things like health care. I wish he would have been more ambitious in terms of, you know, pushing for what we know is right, even knowing that we might not get it all, as opposed to starting in a compromised position. And, you know, his education policies, I have a lot of problems with. But, so I don't put faith in leaders necessarily unless we are going to hold them accountable and keep pushing on
right.
them to do the right thing. So, I like a lot of Bernie's positions. But, you know, just electing somebody is not enough. We have to really work on the ground
right.
to make it happen.
Right. Single payer. Well, you know, one of the things about what Bernie has done is if he does get elected, it is because a lot of us, a lot of people are involved in the electoral process and are saying, you know, I'm going to use my vote to make this revolutionary change, you know, this change that that is so vital because of not only the planet and environment, but because of the incredible suffering that is going on in this world, and we are allowing to happen by, you know, people not having to be conscious of their actions or pretending or lying to us, like the oil industry. You know, those things, it's just that, you know, the people of this planet have the power to change this, and it's because of this technology, which is also being used, you know, to lie to us. So it's kind of a slippery slope, but I do feel that there's hope, and I do feel that it's Chicago Teachers Union who really came out strong, and Seattle teachers did too, and it sort of sparked a lot of other unions to be stronger. But I don't know how Diane Ravitch, if she's still asking for some kind of compromise to what they're putting out. I know that was one issue that Opt Out had with her, was that she was willing to compromise on, you know, on the testing, on the standardized testing, and instead of, you know, saying no, that we just know that that's not good for the child, you know that should lay with the parents and the child. It shouldn't be, you know, just, you know, something, or be, children should not be punished for not doing it. Or, I mean, these just really archaic, you know, behavior. So I really support Opt Out and Peg Robertson, and I hope that Diane Ravitch isn't pushing this agenda the way that the unions are, and that I feel Hillary Clinton is.
Yeah, I feel like hopefully Diane learned her lesson. I mean, that was a big part of her changing her whole view on education, was that she saw that sort of the test and punish elements of No Child Left Behind were really damaging to schools and to children, and that's why she, you know, completely changed her point of view. You know, I think in terms of No Child Left Behind, the idea of holding school districts accountable for making sure that, you know, minority groups and, you know, subpopulations in those districts are getting what they need, I think is a good thing. We have to do that. It's not okay for a school district to treat black students differently than white students and give them an inferior education. But I don't know that standardized testing every year in every subject is the way to do that, right?
No, that's killing them.
Other ways to do it.
That's killing them, yeah. And they're taking away what will help. They're taking away the arts and music.
Right.
They're taking away
low-income students more than it harms higher-income students. Right?
Yes.
It harms the students that it's supposed to be helping.
Right.
More so than the other students.
And, yeah. It's not only not, you know, it's not only stupid. It's hurting them. It's hurtful. It's an approach that you just don't use, especially if someone's compromised, you know? So I, yeah. Well,
yeah, it's a tough one. I know that the CPU has supported parents in opting out and has, you know, been supportive of that. The CPU has come out asking actually for Rahm Emanuel's resignation because of the Laquan McDonald shooting and cover up. And that's where unions have to be. Unions have to be pushing for what's right for students. You know, the poisoning of people in Flint, Michigan, by their governor who, switched the water supply in Flint, Michigan has been appalling. And one awesome thing that I saw was some of the unions were trucking in water for the people of Flint, Michigan. You know, that's where unions need to be, actually just fighting and working for the people, you know, at the grassroots level.
Yeah, I was heartened to see that. And I just also hope that they're not asked to pay for drinkable water. I had heard something about they're being charged, you know.
Oh, yeah, they still are billing them for all the poisoned water they received over the last month. So if people didn't pay their water bill, they're you know, trying to collect money for poisoned water. Yeah, it's absurd.
It's so medieval. I mean, that's, you know, it's another thing. It's just so ugly. It's hideous. And I think that, you know, a lot of people do things for money. I know people who live where there's a lot of fracking going on, which is affecting their water and creating earthquakes. You know, they say to me, you know, the people next door just sold, you know, and to allow fracking on their land. And you say to them, but, you know, don't you tell them, do they see the science, don't they know what's happening to the water? And it's like, no, they just see all this money. And you're telling them that they can't have all this money. And that makes me just so sad. It says something so sick and sad about our culture. But then again, I do see what's happening with Bernie Sanders and with Chicago Teachers Union and with opt-out and parent strike, and I, you know, have hope.
Yeah, that does give me hope, and the new activists we're seeing among, you know, in the Black Lives Matter movement, I think that's really crucial as well. And Moral Mondays, you know, people are pushing back and envisioning the world as they would like it to be, and that's the first step, right? I mean, if we have hope if we can envision a future that is better than the one we're in, and then we have something to work toward at that point. And
yeah,
if we do it together, we'll get there.
Yeah, I think we will too. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time away on this holiday from your family and spending it with us here on Education Now and with me, Athena Melville, your host on Education Now, to talk about this and bring us up to date with what's going on. Thank you so much, Philip.
Thank you so much.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Welcome to Education Now. This is your host, Athena Melville. And it brings me such great pleasure to welcome Peggy Robertson for an update on opting out of public education testing. We spoke with Peggy in August last year and in December of 2011. And since then, this revolution, which is national and has really taken off and sparked outrageous retaliation from many districts. And so welcome, Peggy. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Athena.
So let's not waste any time. Let's start right off by talking about ESSA, or Every Student Succeeds Act. Could you talk about that and how that what your criticism is of it, if you have any, and how you feel that's impacting parents and teachers who want to opt out?
You bet. Well, I just finished reading it a week ago, and it's a lot to digest. But, you know, as you read it, certain things stand out pretty clearly. And the one thing that I noticed as I read it is that it really, it's almost like wrapping up a federal bill and saying, here's public education and handing it over to the corporations. Because in the bill, there's a lot of money for charters. There's less money for magnets. There is a lot of money for alternative certification for teachers. And really, that section is probably one of the most terrifying, because the more you read, it really makes it clear that anything goes. The idea would be to destroy the colleges of education, to turn teacher education into, you know, what TSA likes, a 5 to 6 week or maybe a 1 year program where you work within a school and then you take your teacher license test and suddenly you're a teacher. It's really absolute destruction of the teaching profession, in my opinion. And the charter piece is also absolutely terrifying. I mean, they love charters. So for me, reading the ESSA, those two are just glaringly terrifying. Now, the other piece that is really scary is the assessment piece. And what's been really hard to clarify for people about the ESSA is that people are excited that testing has been handed over to the states. They feel like the states have more control. But if you read it very carefully, there are a lot of things put in place that really don't give you that much control. For example, there are audits. There is peer review of state assessment plans. And then all of these grants are tied to certain stipulations, such as adhering to the, what do they call it now? I think now they're going to be, I think it's called the Challenging Academic State Standards. So they've gotten rid of the word Common Core, and they've rephrased it to be the state, challenging state academic standards. And I may be saying it in the wrong order, but they literally, through the entire draft of the 1,061-page draft, they go through and they strike out how it was previously worded to make sure that people know that these are state standards. So while it might look like the states have more control, in my opinion, they really don't. And then the other piece of it is this: if you want the money to support you in creating innovative assessments, they will offer you all sorts of support. They will check it for you. They've got all these things in place to make sure that certain people are helping you to get what they want in terms of assessment. Now, what they really want in terms of assessment is what we would refer to as competency-based testing, sometimes referred to as mastery testing or proficiency testing. And really what that means is every particular skill a child is learning will be assessed ongoing, which means the children will be tested every day. Now, right there, when we say that, it's like, well, how does one opt out of that? Good question. I know here in Denver we have parents already in situations like this where all of the curriculum is online, and so you can't opt out of it because the daily work is the daily testing. And so the only way to opt out of that really is to get ahead of the game and have a curriculum review, I think, with the parents the summer before to see what you can do about getting rid of certain curriculum. You know, we're just kind of launching into how we're going to handle that. It's a tricky one, because how do you opt out of daily online assessment? There's a particular program here in Denver. I think it's called Teach to One Math. And what these children do is they come in, the computers, there's like almost like an airport screen where it tells you where to pick up your luggage or where your flight is. They have a screen like that in the classroom that tells the children where they need to start their day based on the assessment that the computer gave the child the day before. And so the teachers aren't planning for instruction. The teachers aren't planning the assessments. The teachers simply look at the computer curriculum and the computer-graded assessment, and then that's where the children go, and the teachers kind of walk around to help the kids, you know, as a more of a facilitator, not a teacher. And then on certain occasions, the computer will say these kids need small group instruction or maybe they need whole group instruction, and then the teachers will assist in doing that. But the computer is guiding the inception of the child. The teacher and the child do not guide the student's learning. And that's where we're headed. Now, if you think about what that looks like, the first thing to recognize is you can have more kids in a classroom. So if you look at Teach to One Math on their website, they'll talk about having 150 kids in a classroom, and then you've got these teachers walking around as facilitators, really just kind of popping in and pointing to the computer screen and saying, try this or try this on paper, and then they still have to go and finish their assessment on the computer. I know that's a lot of information, but that's kind of where we're headed, and that is what the ESSA is promoting and offering lots of money for in terms of assessment grants.
I am so revolted by this, which is, one of the big reasons I wanted to have you on. I really feel like opt-out is the answer. It has empowered so many teachers and so many parents already, and it's grown just so much since 2011. I mean, it's incredible. And that power is threatening. It is threatening to this establishment that wants to control our children. Now, people who have a lot of money, they've left the system long ago, or they live in these districts which are like Goldilocks districts, like, the South Bay, where, they said no to Prop 13, and they still give money to their schools. But even there, they're starting to, look at a lot of the different pictures. But still, where parents have choice, where parents are empowered, they've taken their children out of the system, or they've started with system money schools that are really fabulous. Now, this is really who it hurts are poor people and people of color, which are fast, growing to be the majority. And a lot of people think they're not poor because they think they're in the middle class, which has practically disappeared in this country too. And this testing is a killer. It goes against everything we know about child growth and development. Everything we know says this is not only bad, in terms of education, this hurts the child. This stunts the child. This is like, it's criminal. It really is. And then that it is, the teachers' colleges, I mean, we have such fantastic university and college teacher programs that Finland sent their experts here.
I know.
And they say, you taught us everything we know, so it's going to take you a while to get back where you were. But one of the things you can't do is it has to become personal. It has to become, that's the way you transform education. And to do that, you certainly can't have class sizes that are 50 and 100 to 1. So there's another thing that's just like, it goes against the science, it goes against what's best for the child, it goes against the experts in education. It infuriates me, and as you can tell, and I think that the unions, in my mind, should have taken on this issue long ago, and they didn't.
Yes.
And somehow they're supporting this new Common Core.
They're supporting the ESSA for sure. I mean, they couldn't wait to get that thing rushed through. It took them, 10 days? Nobody had time to read it, and then you've got, Lily and Randy applauding as Obama signs the document. And, it's what's so fascinating to me is that I really feel like this is what's happening. At the national level, I think the union people are scrambling to get to the top somewhere before this all comes crashing down, because ultimately, by allowing them to sign the ESSA, you are destroying the teachers' unions, because if everyone has alternative certification and teachers are only in the profession for 2 years because they, wear them out, and really that's the end goal, is get young people, they work 60, 70 hours a week for 2 years and then drop them and get two, get more again at a cheap rate. They
right.
don't want any experienced teachers. So there will be no teachers unions. So it's kind of like, in my opinion, everyone's scrambling saying, okay, what can I get? What can I get appointed to do if I support this PSSA
right.
before it all comes crashing down. Now, the fascinating thing is the PSSA only has 4 years, and then in 4 years it'll be reevaluated, I guess, you know, reauthorized or changed. So I guess for us as activists, the good news is that we have 4 years to figure this out and educate before it comes to the forefront again. The bad news is they're going to be rushing like madmen to make as much money as they can, as quickly as they can, before the public figures out what happened. So it's kind of it's a race. And opt-out, you know, back in the day, is child's play compared to what we have to figure out now. And that's what we're all doing right now. We're trying to figure out what's our next mode of attack. Opting out of the test will not be enough. It's too huge, this PSSA, and what it encompasses, and it will require so much more in terms of activist work.
And do you think that'll be a big topic at the United Opt-Out Conference in Philadelphia this February,
yes.
from the 26th to the 28th? Yeah,
yes.
That's great.
That's exactly it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, transisting, resisting, and igniting revolution. Yay!
Well, yes, that's what's necessary at this point.
Yes, I totally agree with you. I just cannot believe people who were compromised. And in those 4 years, you know, I keep thinking about is I want it to be much faster than that. I want it to be like a quantum jump. I want it to be,
yes.
you know, because there's children's lives in that, you know.
They're experimenting on these children. That's what they're doing.
Right. They're milking. They're milking the public cow. The private sector is milking the public cow, which is another reason I was telling Phil Cantor when I was talking to him about Chicago. He was saying that the teachers union there is going to strike. And then they said, well, let's negotiate, and so that they're negotiating, and then in May, you know, they'll talk again. But one of the things that they have done is that there's the power in that union is all its membership. All of its membership has to agree, not just a little few people on there, right? And for so many people, that's not even an elected board. So, you know, that's a great model for a union that they're putting forth there in Chicago. And I also feel like Bernie Sanders is the one that the majority of teachers want. And yet the union supported Hillary.
All right, again. There's so many contradictions, aren't there? You know,
right. They didn't ask.
Supports privatization. You know, various forms of it.
Right, and not asking the union members to vote on who they wanted to back. Talk about.
I know, it's infuriating.
It is. It's very. It really is. It infuriates me. Well, I've told them before, your contact information is still writepeg@juno.com?
Yes, uh-huh.
And your blog is www.pegwithpen.com at www.unitedoptout.com.
Yes.
And that's where you can read so much of Peggy's great writing and keep up to date on this amazing movement that, as I said, I feel is just empowering parents and empowering teachers and empowering communities to take
yes.
control and not let these children be used by this private enterprise that's being, you know, supported by, you know, I know that you didn't write this article, Peggy, but I know that one of the Netflix billionaires is supporting this. I know that the Koch brothers are supporting this. And that is another reason why people should go like, what? What?
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, that's just, oh,
you got to wonder, like, don't people recognize that? How strange is it that all of these billionaires suddenly care about children? I mean, come on. This is about making money. It's always been about making money. And I do. I wish the public would wake up, and I wish that we could get absolute mass opt-out this year. You know, we're hoping to triple our numbers here in Colorado this year. I would hope that would happen all over the country and even more. We've got to do something, because with this ESSA headed, you know, toward us, we've got to make it clear that we're not going to stand for this before all of this stuff. You know, there's going to be all sorts of new bills going through the legislative session that we're going to have to fight to take down more agendas and more reform that is harming our children and destroying the teaching profession.
Yes, we do. We need to. And I have relatives and friends in Colorado, Denver, and Aurora. And I hope that they will work hard, you know, on this issue as hard as they have on a lot of other issues. But I did hear one person, teacher, say to me, it's about job security.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me think about what you've been going through. And,
yes.
And I can't help but feel like asking you to be on a time card.
I mean, Athena, I know, right? Just to tell the story quickly, is I'm currently a literacy interventionist, you know, on a contract with benefits, and I was informed last week that my position would now be on a time card per diem, in other words, per day, and I would not receive any benefits, and that there just wasn't enough money to do it another way. So we'll see how that pans out. You know, I've already talked to my union to see what are my options. If indeed that is what happens at the end of the year, I at least have until May to figure this out. And then the question remains, you know, the school I'm at right now, things are so challenging and so difficult anyway. Is that the best place for me anyway? You know, maybe I need to move on, and maybe this is just a sign that it's time to find something else at another school or figure out a way to do my activist work full time. I really wish, is that over the next 4 years I could do this activist work full time to really help shift ESSA so that when it comes up for reauthorization, we the people are controlling this, and we have had our demands met. That's my dream.
Yes, well, perhaps you're right. Perhaps it's a blessing in disguise. But, you know, I couldn't help but feel like it was retaliation, because I feel like you have a lot of power right now with a lot of teachers, with a lot of parents, and with a lot of education, people who really care about education. And so, you know, that's where I went with it. But I just, you know, that you would be working on this full time for 4 years is wonderful. As it is, your kids share you with, you know, your work and with all of us, you know, who are so grateful for Opt Out, and they're wonderful kids too. You thank them for sharing you with me today, won't you?
I will, Athena.
Well, is there anything else that we should be sure to cover? You know, that you said you're currently a literacy interventionist at an elementary school in Aurora, and you devote the rest of your time to United Opt Out. So I think we've said almost everything we wanted to say.
I think we have. Thank you so much for interviewing me again.
Thank you so, so very much for agreeing to be my guest. Take very good care.
Okay, thanks, Athena. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself
because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know.